Welcome back to the Motor City Sports Rundown. I'm your host, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host. We've got a packed show today. And let me tell you, the tension in Detroit right now is absolutely palpable.
That is the understatement of the year. The Pistons are fighting for their playoff lives. The Tigers' farm system is buzzing with anticipation, and there's just a lot of moving parts in the local sports scene keeping everyone on edge.
Absolutely. It feels like every single day there's a new storyline testing the patience and the blood pressure of Detroit fans, especially with the Pistons on the brink of what could be a historic early exit.
Exactly. And speaking of the Pistons, we're going to look at a really fascinating subplot in this series against the Magic. It goes far beyond the X's and O's and dives right into the personal lives of the head coaches.
Yeah, the dynamic between J.B. Bickerstaff and Jamal Mosley is something else. We'll also be talking Tigers baseball, specifically the timeline for the highly touted prospect Max Clark. Everyone wants to know when he's coming up to Comerica Park, and Scott Harris just gave us some insight.
Spoiler alert, he's preaching patience, which I know is not what fans want to hear right now when the team is competing. Let's get right into it. Let's start on the diamond. The Tigers youth movement has been the talk of the town, especially with Kevin McGonigal making his historic, record-breaking opening day debut recently and immediately securing that massive $150 million contract extension. Naturally, everyone's eyes have shifted to the next big name in the pipeline, Max Clark. Right, he is the crown jewel right now. He's the number 8 overall prospect in all of baseball, according to MLB Pipeline. He's currently tearing it up for the AAA Toledo Mudhens. Naturally, the fan base is clamoring for him to get the call up. We want the shiny new toy in Detroit, especially when the team is actually competing in the American League Central. But Tigers president of baseball operations, Scott Harris, is aggressively tapping the brakes. In a recent interview, Harris stated plainly that it is, quote, premature to actually forecast when Clark will make his MLB debut. He wouldn't even give a ballpark month. And honestly, I get it. It's frustrating for fans who are watching the Tigers battle it out in the AL Central and thinking, man, this kid could be the offensive spark we need right now. But you have to remember the investment here. Clark was the 3rd overall pick in the 2023 MLB draft. He signed for a massive $7.7 million bonus. You do not rush a foundational piece like that just to get a slight bump in June or July. That's the keyword, investment. Harris is notoriously protective of prospect development. He doesn't want a guy coming up, struggling against major league breaking balls, and losing his confidence. But the flip side is the McGonigal factor. McGonigal came up and instantly looked like a 10-year veteran. Does that immediate success create an internal pressure for the front office to say, hey, maybe Clark is ready to make the leap too? I think it absolutely creates pressure, but maybe it's more external pressure from the media and the fans than internal pressure. The fans see McGonigal and think, see, the kids are all right, bring them all up. But the front office is looking at a massive dashboard of metrics. They're looking at Clark's strikeout rates, his exit velocity, his ability to hit opposite field against left-handed pitching, his defensive reads in center field. If those underlying numbers in Toledo aren't exactly where they want them, they won't force it. Critics, of course, will point to the elephant in the room, service time manipulation. It's the ugly phrase that always comes up when a top-tier prospect is kept in AAA despite playing well. You keep him down just long enough to secure an extra year of team control. Do you think that's playing a role here, or is it purely development?
It's naive to think service time isn't a factor at all. Every front office in Major League Baseball is acutely aware of the service time clock. It dictates the financial future of the franchise. But I genuinely believe with Harris, the primary driver is development. He wants Clark to be a finished product, or as close to it as possible, when he steps into the batter's box at Comerica Park. The jump from AAA pitching to the majors is massive. You're facing guys who can locate a 98-mile-per-hour fastball on the black.
The article points out that Clark is performing well at AAA. So what is the missing piece? Is it just getting 500 at-bats?
Reps, consistency, and honestly waiting for a clear, everyday spot to open up on the major league roster. You don't bring up a talent like Max Clark to sit on the bench 3 days a week and pinch hit. When he comes up, he needs to be penciled into the lineup card every single day. If the current outfield rotation in Detroit doesn't allow for that without disrupting the chemistry of a team in a pennant race, you leave him in Toledo, where he can play every day.
It's a delicate balance. The Tigers are trying to win now in a very winnable division, but they are also trying to build a sustainable contender for the next decade. Clark is a cornerstone of that future. If rushing him costs you long-term value, it's not worth the short-term bump in the standings.
Exactly. And let's not forget the contract extension aspect. Sometimes teams wait to bring a guy up until they've ironed out a long-term, team-friendly extension, much like they did with McGonagall. If those talks are happening behind the scenes, that could also dictate the timeline. If you sign him to a 10-year deal tomorrow, the service time issue vanishes, and maybe he's on a plane to Detroit the next day.
That's a great point. Ultimately, it sounds like we're going to have to exercise the one thing sports fans hate the most: patience. Max Clark is coming, but Scott Harris is making sure it's on the organization's schedule.
Moving from the diamond to the hardwood, the Detroit Pistons are in an absolute dogfight against the Orlando Magic. The top-seeded Pistons, a team that won 60 games, are shockingly down 3-1 to the 8-seeded Magic. We've talked ad nauseum about the on-court struggles, the turnovers, the blown leads, but there's a human element to this series that the New York Times just highlighted, and it is a fascinating read.
It really is. It focuses on the relationship between the two head coaches, J.B. Bickerstaff for the Pistons and Jamal Mosley for the Magic. These guys aren't just colleagues who say hello at the coaches' meetings. They are incredibly close friends. The article notes they have communicated frequently for two solid decades, but right now, during this series, complete radio silence. Yeah, they intentionally cease all contact during a playoff series against each other. Mosley actually described the competition against his friend as being like, quote, going into an octagon or a boxing match. That is intense imagery, and you have to understand the deep roots of this friendship. It goes back to Bickerstaff's father, Bernie. Bernie Bickerstaff worked closely with Mosley as an assistant coach in Cleveland during the 2013-14 season. So there's a deep, familial, multi-generational basketball connection here. They literally refer to each other as family. But when the ball tips off, that goes out the window. It begs the question, how do you manage that emotional conflict? You're trying to end your best friend's season. You're trying to ruin their year. I think you have to heavily compartmentalize. And as a head coach in the NBA, you're already wired to be hyper-competitive. You don't get to that seat, you don't win 60 games in the regular season without being a killer in some respect. So for 48 minutes a night, that guy on the other sideline isn't your friend Jamal or your buddy JB. He's an obstacle in your path to a championship. The classic business, not personal approach. But does it effectively mitigate the strain on the relationship long term? I mean, think about the stakes right now. The Pistons were a 60-22 team, the undisputed number one seed in the East. If they lose this series to the 8 seed, which Mosley is currently engineering, it's a historic collapse. That's the kind of loss that defines a career, that gets people fired. Can you just grab a beer in July and say, hey man, no hard feelings about orchestrating the biggest upset of the decade at my expense? That's the million-dollar question. I think the mutual respect is what ultimately saves the friendship. Mosley knows exactly the immense pressure Bickerstaff is under in Detroit. Bickerstaff knows how hard Mosley has worked to get this Magic team from the play-in tournament to the brink of a massive upset. They respect the grind. But yeah, if Orlando pulls this off and eliminates Detroit, Thanksgiving dinner might be a little awkward this year.
It also adds a layer of psychological warfare to the series. These guys know each other's tendencies intimately. They know how the other thinks, how they react under pressure, what sets them off. Mosley knows what buttons to push to frustrate a Bickerstaff coach team, and vice versa.
And we're seeing that play out on the court. The Magic have completely disrupted the Pistons' rhythm. They've made it a gritty, ugly, physical series. That's a testament to Mosley understanding exactly what Bickerstaff wants to do offensively and systematically taking it away. He knows the playbook because he knows the man who wrote it.
It's the ultimate chess match, played by two guys who know each other's opening moves by heart. And right now, Mosley has Bickerstaff in check. The Pistons need a massive adjustment, not just tactically, but emotionally, to climb out of this 3-1 hole.
They really do. And it's going to be fascinating to see if Bickerstaff can outmaneuver his friend in Game 5. Because if he doesn't, this octagon match is going to end in a knockout. And it's the top seed hitting the mat early.
It's a great piece from the New York Times, really pulling back the curtain on the emotional toll of the NBA playoffs. It's not just about X's and O's. It's about human beings navigating incredibly complex relationships under the brightest lights imaginable. All right, let's hit a few more stories real quick before we get out of here.
Sounds good. Keep the pace up. What's next on the docket?
Sticking with the Pistons, looking ahead to Game 5 tonight, Wednesday, April 29th, Major Wager has a breakdown of the match player stats, and the trends are heavily stacked against Detroit. They dropped Game 4, 94-88, and now face that daunting 3-1 deficit against the 8-seeded Magic.
Yeah, a 60-22 regular season record doesn't mean much when you're facing elimination in the first round. The big question is whether they can channel that 2003 franchise history and climb out of a 3-1 hole to win the series. It has to start with finding some offensive rhythm, because 88 points just isn't going to cut it, especially with the rust factor that always plagues top seeds who have a week off before the playoffs.
Finally, a bit of lighter news from the ice. Sean McIndoe over at the New York Times ran a piece titled, "Your NHL Team is the Best," at this one very specific stat from the 2025-26 season. It's a fun, lighthearted look at obscure stats to find a win for every team. It's exactly the kind of off-season content you need when your team misses the mark. It's funny how advanced analytics have gotten so granular that you can literally find a positive metric for any franchise if you slice the data thin enough. It really makes you wonder if these hyper-specific stats genuinely improve fan engagement, or if it just highlights how desperate some fan bases are for any positive news. But hey, it's a nice little silver lining for Red Wings fans. That is going to do it for today's episode of the Motor City Sports Rundown. A huge thanks to everyone for tuning in and navigating the incredible highs and terrifying lows of Detroit sports with us. Make sure you're subscribed wherever you get your podcasts, whether that is Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else, so you never miss an episode. We'll be back tomorrow to break down exactly what happens in Game 5. Let's hope the Pistons can keep their season alive and force a Game 6. Fingers crossed. Until then, stay safe, keep the faith, and go Detroit.